Proverbs. There's this book right in the middle of the Bible. It's called Proverbs. Well, you know what a proverb is. You've got Aesop fables and you've got things like that. Then we've got proverbs that we say day to day, but proverbs in the Bible? Why? And what are they there for? Are they the same as the proverbs that we talk about day to day? Do they have the same purpose? That's what we're going to talk about today. Why Proverbs? Why do we have this book here? What is the purpose of these Proverbs? Why is it so important to have these Proverbs that the Bible contains them? Is it just because a guy named Solomon wrote a bunch of them? We'll find out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about why God finds it important for us to have these Proverbs. So important that it's in His Word that's been passed down from year to year, generation to generation, millennium to millennium. We've had them for thousands of years, and that's what we're going to talk about today. And in fact, over the next 6 weeks, we're going to talk about Proverbs. If you look at your handout, you can see our schedule and what we're going to be talking about over the next 5 weeks. And today we're going to talk more generally about the book and about the purpose of Proverbs. But in future weeks, we're going to take topics and look at different proverbs that are in this book pertaining to that topic. For instance, next week, we'll talk about the simple, the mocker, and the fool. These are people who desperately need wisdom and don't have it. And we'll see what the book of Proverbs has to say about people who don't have wisdom and need it. Then the week after that, we'll talk about our relationship with God and proverbs that deal with that. And then our relationship with those in our family. Then our relationship with friends and other people, and then our relationship at work. Okay, so that's where we're heading with this. It should be a fun, interesting class. I'll tell you right now to turn to page 4, and you'll see you've got a little test. And go ahead and do this test now. You could do it afterwards, whenever, but sometime do this test. And just take a look at it now. You can see there's two halves to it, and we'll have a test like this every week. In the first half, we'll take a proverb from the book of Proverbs, from the Bible, and have the two halves of it split up, and you have to match them. Okay, so you got the first batch that go together, the second batch, third batch, four batch here this week. There's four batches. And so one goes with what? Well, I can tell you, one goes with C. I'll go ahead and give you that one. So pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And you can look that up in chapter 16, verse 18. Okay, so I'll let you match up the others. The second half that you see at the bottom are proverbs that you should know. Okay, these are proverbs we use today. So proverbs are not something that were around 3,000 years ago, but rather their proverbs are things that we use today. A bird in the hand is worth what? Two in the bush. Okay? And so you've got fill in the blank here to see how well you know some of the common proverbs of the day. All right? Now, I'm not going to give you the answers on this recording. Instead, I'll recommend you and I'll ask you to go ahead and go to the website, www.BibleStoriesForAdults.com/proverbs. Where Proverbs is the P is capitalized, and you will see that you have not only the handout, but also the teacher notes, and the teacher notes has the answers. There's also going to be a PowerPoint that you could do the PowerPoint, and that walks you through the answers as well. Okay? So do that either now or do that after we go through this study, and it should be some fun. Okay? Well, let's go ahead and talk about Proverbs. First thing, if we're going to study Proverbs, we've got to know what a proverb is. So hit pause, think about what is a proverb, and then start up again and I'll talk about it, okay? Now, a proverb is a statement of commonplace truth that uses some kind of figures of speech or some kind of comparison, okay? So it's just a commonplace truth. Now, are proverbs always true? No. Okay, they're generalizations. Okay, they're general principles, general guidelines, and for the most part, they're true. But in any given instance, you might say, oh, boy, that disproved this proverb. But but for the most part, they're good guidelines and rules of thumb and principles to follow on a general basis. Okay? Now, they're very interesting. If you've done the test, or when you do the test, you'll find it's kind of interesting. And you can think about any of those proverbs, and you can spend a fair amount of time thinking about any proverb and gain from doing so. And apply that proverb to your life and benefit from that. Okay? So there's benefit there. But why, and they're interesting, some of them are very humorous, but why should we bother with them? We'll gain from them, but why should we bother with them in the Bible and things like that? Why was it so important that we have these proverbs in God's Word? Proverbs chapter 1, the book starts out by saying, these are the proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel. And why do we have them? For attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. That means doing what is right and just and fair. Okay, and it goes on, for giving prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. Even let the wise listen, those who already have wisdom, let them listen and add to their learning. And let those who have discernment get guidance. Okay? These proverbs will help you understand proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. So there's a lot of things that we can learn. These proverbs are valuable for attaining wisdom, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life, that is, knowing what is right and just. And we'll break these verses out a little bit more on page 3, okay? But in living the way that God intended us to live, these proverbs are given to help us do that. We'll talk more about that. We'll see more about how that's important to God as we go on. Okay? So there is benefit. There's benefit in learning from these proverbs and gaining wisdom. And in fact, this is part of the section of wisdom literature that we have in the Bible. And so let's not only understand what a proverb is, but let's also understand what wisdom is. In verse 2, it says these proverbs are good for attaining wisdom. That Hebrew word is chokmah. Okay, chokmah. And that's the Hebrew word that's used there. And it doesn't just mean, you get to the Hebrew roots of some of these words and it gives you a whole lot more meaning than what we capture in our English equivalent. And this wisdom that it talks about here deals with skillfulness in dealing with the matters at hand so as to get the best results. In whatever it is that you're dealing with, if you have wisdom, you're going to deal with it in a better way than someone who doesn't have wisdom and get better results. Okay, that's what the chokmah is trying to convey there. Here we're dealing with matters of life, is what the book of Proverbs is, and what most of these proverbs are about. It's just common, day-to-day, everyday life kind of situations. So chokmah relates to skillful mastery of life. You want to have a better life? You want to master your life? You want to gain and grow and enjoy your life? Wisdom is important for that. Chokmah brings that. Okay. There's a practical expertise that you gain by going through life that gives you wisdom. And some of that expertise is expertise from experience that you experience and you learn from. But we can also learn from the experiences of others. And the experiences of others are what have led to these proverbs. These proverbs are not something that someone just conjured up and says, oh, I think this is a good idea, but rather they're the result of people's experiences. That's where the word expertise comes from. Okay? So it's practical expertise that leads to a full and successful life. We all want to live better lives. We all want to enjoy our lives. We all want to have a full and successful life. How do you do that? With wisdom. Okay, with chokmah. And these proverbs are there to help us gain that wisdom. And that wisdom, that skillful mastery of life, is something that's been sought out from the beginning of time, from the beginning of mankind. In the time that this book was written, the time of Solomon, in the ancient Near East, wisdom was a big, big thing. All the major civilizations sought out wisdom. They all had their books of Proverbs and books of wisdom where they shared writings of wisdom with each other. In fact, there's a section here in the book of Proverbs that appears to be wisdom from someone else. Okay, someone that wasn't an Israelite, but they wanted to capture it in here because it was apparently words of God kind of thing. We'll get to that today too. Now, there's two different types of wisdom. Okay, so when we talk about wisdom, there's two types of wisdom that were important to the ancient Near East people. One of them had to deal with court wisdom. Okay, so you've got kings and leaders. They want to lead in a wise manner. They want to do what is right and just and fair. They want to have a successful leadership, kingship, whatever. And so they sought out wisdom. And we see, for example, in 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 23, in the time of David, Solomon's father, it says, "Now in those days, the advice that Ahithophel gave was like that of one who inquires of God. That was how both David and Absalom required all of Ahithophel's advice." So the advice that they got, that King David and his son Absalom got from Ahithophel, it was clear that was truth from God. That was like it was advice that God was giving. Okay? And David sought that out. Kings sought out the wisdom of God, the truth, the best ways, the wisdom that people had. This court wisdom was important. Now, if you had a leader, a king, that had the wisdom, you know, they would still look to advisors to a degree, but if you had a king who had wisdom, well then, the country would thrive and the nation would thrive and things would go well for that nation, right? It just kind of flows from that. As a leader makes good decisions, the people benefit. As a leader makes bad decisions, the people suffer. That sounds like a proverb, doesn't it? I think it's probably in there somewhere. that's part of the discussions that we have of politics every day. Well, take a look at 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 30. Here we see there was a king who had this wisdom. Okay, we'll go verse 30. It says, "Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East, and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt." So here we had Solomon who had this great wisdom. Now this was the court wisdom. This was the wisdom that was valuable and important and useful in leading a nation and leading a people. Okay. Now there's another type of wisdom, and that's folk wisdom. That's the day-to-day stuff. And this is common to all people at all times. Okay. You look at the court wisdom and it's very situational based upon what's going on at the time, based on who's who, what's what, and applying wisdom to the situation. Well, folk wisdom is this is what parents teach their kids. This is what common sense is about, okay, is learning how to thrive in life. That's this wisdom that we're talking about. And that's what the book of Proverbs focuses on. The book of Proverbs does not focus on court wisdom, on how to lead a nation, although it's got a few sayings in there that that are helpful to court wisdom situations. But it's really focused on everybody. It's focused on folk wisdom. It's focused on wisdom that we can all use, that we can all apply to our daily lives. Look in Proverbs chapter 3, the first couple of verses. It says, "My son, do not forget my teaching, but keep my commands in your heart." Okay? Talking about my son, these are sayings that a parent would give their child. These are lessons that a parent would give. You might want to hit pause and just stop and think, what are some of the sayings? What are some of the words of wisdom that your parents passed on to you, that your mom said, that your dad said, that you got stuck in you because they taught you those things? And then you might think, if you're a parent, what are some of the words of wisdom that you've passed on to your kids that they would say are words of wisdom that they've gained from you? That's a big part of the role of a parent. And so this parent here is saying, "My son, do not forget my teaching. Keep my commands in your heart." Why? Because they will prolong your life many years and bring you prosperity. There is benefit to life by having wisdom. There's benefit to life by applying these wise proverbs. Yes, you can have false proverbs too. And those, that's where discernment comes into play. Okay? So we want to use proverbs that are, that relate to God's truth, that relate to the way that God wants us to live. Okay? Now, there are a lot of secular sayings. There are a lot of, again, these are day-to-day truths that apply, and you can find, some of these are things that you would expect to find in Poor Richard's Almanac or any other book of daily, of today's Proverbs. Take a look, for instance, at, we'll say in chapter 3, verse 27, it says, "Do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it's in your power to act." Now that's a good proverb for everyone, okay? That's a day-to-day kind of thing, and whether you're Christian, whether you follow God or not, that's good for everyone to know. In fact, all of these are. But you see, this is a very commonplace, secular-sounding kind of statement. Okay, don't withhold good when it's in your power to act, right? But there is a difference between secular human wisdom and the true wisdom that God offers. And that's a lot about what the book of Proverbs points us to. Yes, there are some good, common day-to-day applications that we have that you could find elsewhere that everyone would agree to. But there's also an importance to recognize the difference between what we believe is true and what God knows is true. And that what is God's truth and His wisdom and understanding. Proverbs 3 again, verse 5, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding." Okay? So, you've got some wisdom, but don't trust in that. Instead, trust in the Lord. Trust in God with all your heart. Don't lean on your understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. Look to God for His wisdom, rather than to yourself for your wisdom. Verse 7, don't be wise in your own eyes. Okay? If you think you've got all the wisdom, you're fooling yourself. Instead, fear the Lord and shun evil. We'll talk more about what that fear the Lord means as we go on. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Okay? Health to your body and nourishment to your bones. So there's a value to day-to-day life. Okay? By looking to God for His wisdom rather than to our own wisdom. In fact, chapter 14, verse 12 says there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, it ends in death. So things that may look wise to us, things that may look right to us, may be about as wrong as you can get. So if we really want to have the true wisdom, if we really want to have the truth and do what is right and know what is right, we can't count on ourselves. We can't lean on our own understanding, but instead we put our trust in God, and that teaches us what is true and right and just and fair. Okay? So again, you see the value now. You see the importance of studying and learning the proverbs that we have here in the Bible. Yes, the other proverbs that we have on the bottom of page 4, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Okay? Laughter is the best medicine. That's the first one on the top. Right. Okay. Let bygones be bygones. You can think through those and apply those, and they're beneficial. But if you really want to know the most valuable things, look to God for His wisdom, not to yourself or others for their wisdom. And that's what we have here in the book of Proverbs. Now, the book of Proverbs is part of the Old Testament. I've given you on the bottom of page 1 a little summary of how the Old Testament is organized. Because everybody goes, gosh, where do you find Proverbs? Well, number one, it's right in the middle. And you'll see why in just a minute. But the Old Testament has a very clear and easy to follow organization. Now, our Old Testament organization is a little different than the Hebrew Bible. Okay? Now, in many ways, they're very similar. They both start with Genesis and then Exodus, and they go on like that. But But there's a little different groupings that the Hebrew Bible, the Jewish Bible, has. But if you look at our Bible, it starts out with history. Okay? First, let's tell the story. Let's tell God's story and His story, history. History is His story. And so we start out with the first five books. We call the books of history or the books of the law. This is also called the Torah, which is Hebrew for law, because you find the law that God gave on Mount Sinai in there. Okay, and so we just kind of group that. They're also called the books of Moses, okay, because the tradition says that Moses put these together put these books together. They're also called the Pentateuch, because penta means five, okay, tuch means book, so five books. So what do we have? We have Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the first five books. And that's ancient history. That gets us the start of God's creation, the start of man, things that happen to all people, until God then in Genesis chapter 12 called a guy and said, I'm going to reveal myself to you and to the world through you and through your descendants, through your family. And that guy was Abraham. And then from then on, for the rest of the Old Testament, we have the story of that man's family and how God interacted with them and the world through them. And that's the Israelites, then later the Jews. And that's what we then have after the Pentateuch, which in the Pentateuch, in the first five books, the books of the law, is where God kicks off this family, this new nation. And then we then have the story, the history of that nation. That's what you have then from Joshua to Esther. Now, it's all chronological within that group. Okay? From Joshua to Esther, that's all chronological. Now, you've got some overlap there because, for instance, 1st and 2nd Kings and 1st and 2nd Chronicles cover some of the same things from different perspectives, so you'll have some overlap there. But generically, it's all chronological as you get to Esther. And then you're done with history. And then you get into the books of wisdom, which is Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Songs. Okay, that section there. And then you get into the books of the prophets. Now, the books of the prophets, you'll say, well, you know, it doesn't seem like it's in order because I have Daniel and then I have Hosea, and Hosea came before Daniel. Well, the reason is you've got major prophets and minor prophets. And within the major prophets, and by the way, the difference between a major prophet and a minor prophet is how big their book is. That's really the only difference, okay? It doesn't have anything to do with how important they were. We tend to think that the majors were more important just because we know more about them and more about what they had to say because their books are bigger. But we have the major prophets, and it's chronological from Isaiah to Daniel. And then we go to minor prophets, and it's chronological there as well, from Hosea to Malachi. So that's how the Old Testament's organized. And it's very easy if you try to find a book. Okay, what kind of book is it? Is it history? Is it wisdom? Is it a prophet? And if it's a prophet, is it a major or minor? That'll very quickly get you into a short little quadrant, and then if you have any idea about where in history it was, as you study the Bible, you get to know those things, and then you can zone in on it very quickly. Okay? Some of the harder books that people have trouble finding are the minor prophets. Well, guess what? They're pretty short books, so they're all together in a short section right towards the end of the Old Testament. So if you're trying to find Zechariah, well, that's going to be a minor prophet, and you'll find it there towards the end of the Bible, or end of the Old Testament. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Instead, we're talking about Proverbs. And Proverbs falls in that section of the wisdom literature. This wisdom literature, these books, are just as pertinent today as they were thousands of years ago when they were written. They include Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Songs. And I want to tell you a little bit about each one, because they all relate to this wisdom, and they all answer key questions. Questions that they had thousands of years ago, but questions that we have today. Questions that all humans have struggled with. And that's what these wisdom literature books are all about, is helping us understand the answers to those questions. The very first one, again, they're chronological. Okay, within the books, within the wisdom literature section, these books are chronological. Job being the oldest one. In fact, it's thought that the book of Job is probably the oldest book in existence. It was written somewhere around the time of Isaac, and it tells the story of this man, and through his story, it tries to answer the question, what's the biggest question that people always ask? Why do bad things happen to good people? Okay? Why do bad things happen to good people? And it gives you a great perspective. People who are going through tough times get a lot of benefit out of reading the book of Job because they can see some of the answer to that question. Now, I'll go ahead and give you the answer. Number one, there are no good people. Okay? The bigger question really is, why do good things happen to bad people? Why are we so blessed? We don't deserve it. Why does God shower His grace, undeserved gifts, on us? Okay? That's the bigger question. All right, going on. The next book then is Psalms. Now, the Hebrew word for that is Tehillim. And Tehillim means praises. This is the song book. It's a book filled with praise songs and prayers. This was the hymn book for Israel. Okay? What question does it answer? How is God important to our everyday lives? Again, people who struggle with things love going through the Psalms because they speak to them. They're timeless. They're as appropriate today as they were back then. And they talk about how God is important to us and how God is there for us in our day-to-day lives and how God showers His love on us each and every day. Then we have the book of Proverbs that we're going to study today. These, again, are wise sayings that apply to life. We'll find that there's multiple authors. Most of them are from Solomon. Okay, most people think that all the Proverbs are from Solomon, but they're not. And you'll see that as we keep going on. These are things for everyday life. This is that folk wisdom we talked about, not court wisdom. And this book seeks to answer the question, how do we make the most out of this life? Okay? How do we have a full and successful and joy-filled life? And that's what we're going to be studying these 6 weeks. After that, we have the book of Ecclesiastes. Okay? Ecclesiastes is from Solomon, and this guy, he had everything. He had wisdom, he had knowledge, he had power, he had money, riches, fame, fortune, everything. And from his perspective, he tried to answer, what is the meaning of life? Okay? What's the meaning of life? And he tried everything. He investigated this and he tested it out. He tried wisdom. Okay? He saw that wasn't the meaning of life. He tried foolishness. That wasn't the meaning of life. He tried pleasure. Everything dealing with pleasure. Sex, everything. That wasn't the meaning of life. He tried work. That wasn't the meaning of life. He tried riches, fame, all of that. None of that he found was the meaning of life. What he did find, the meaning of life, it's all about God. Okay, if you've gone through Rick Warren's 40 Days of Purpose, it starts out with the statement, it's not about you. And really then the rest of the 40 days tells you who it's about. It's about God. Well, that's the exact same thing that that Solomon tells us in the book of Ecclesiastes. Then the last book of wisdom is called the Song of Songs, or sometimes the Song of Solomon. And this is a pretty racy book. Okay, as you read through it, it's a book that has a dialogue between two lovers, between a couple that loves each other deeply and can't wait to see each other and can't wait to be in each other's arms. And it answers the question, what kind of example in this life can give us just even a little glimpse into the relationship that God wants to have with us? Okay? And you've got this deep love and deep desire expressed between this couple that's in love. And the thing to realize is that God loves us even more than what we see, the deep love in that book. Okay? So that's the wisdom literature. And so you see they're all wisdom questions that are being answered in these books. And we're only going to talk about one of them. I've got another study that you can go through that's on the Bible Stories for Adults website, again, www.biblestoriesforadults.com, that goes into the book of Job, and you can study the book of Job there. I have not yet produced studies on Psalms or Ecclesiastes or Song of Songs, but give it time, maybe I will, okay? But this is one on Proverbs, and we're not going to cover all the Proverbs. You have got many chapters, and each chapter with many proverbs. There are 30, was it 31, I believe, 31 chapters. And so we don't have time in a six-week class to go through all of them, so or even through all the topics. So I've just picked some key day-to-day topics that that we're going to be studying. Now, as we get into those, we're going to see some commonality. What you're going to find is that the Proverbs are written in Hebrew poetry. I'll tell you what, so is the book of Job. So is the book of Psalms. To a degree, parts of the book of Ecclesiastes, and so is the Song of Songs. So not only are we given this, these words of wisdom in this wisdom literature, but it's done so in a wise way. It's done so in a poetic way that makes it interesting to read, and also a little bit more creative and helpful to remember. That's really what a lot of poetry does. You take a look at, again, look at some of those day-to-day, the current-day proverbs that we have at the bottom of page 4. They're very poetic. Okay, we'll go to the next one, in the second one in the left column. A penny saved is a penny earned. Okay, a very poetic kind of saying. It's not rhyme, but there's a rhythm there. There's a comparison, a relationship there. A penny saved is a penny earned. Okay, so these are written in poetry. Now, when we think of poetry, we think of rhythm and rhyme. Okay, you think of like a limerick or something. Da 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 da. Okay, you've got that rhythm there, and each of those verses rhyme. Each of those lines rhymes with other lines, and so we're used to seeing that in our poetry. A friend in need is a friend indeed. Okay, that's got rhythm and rhyme. Now, in Hebrew poetry, had some of that. You didn't have the rhyming, though, but you did have the rhythm. You have assonance. You have alliteration. Okay, those three parts, and we find those in English poetry as well. But that's what Hebrew poetry was built around: rhythm, assonance, and alliteration. Rhythm, okay, we've just kind of talked about that with a limerick. There's a certain number of accented syllables per line. It just kind of flows. The problem with this is when you translate from Hebrew, you lose it. It's not there. You read these proverbs and you don't see the rhythm because we're not reading it or saying it in the language that it was written in that had that rhythm. Okay? So we've lost the rhythm in our English translation. Assonance. Assonance is deliberate repetition of the same vowel sounds. Okay, a lot of A's or E's or I's or whatever the vowel sound is repeated over and over again, and that's called assonance. You know what? As we translate from Hebrew to English, that's lost. So you don't get that when you read the book of Proverbs because we're not in that language in which it was written. The third thing, alliteration. That is a juxtaposition of words and syllables that begin with the same consonants. Okay, so we have vowels in play with assonance. We have consonants in play with alliteration. Again, we've lost that in the translation from Hebrew to English. So we miss all that. An example, because you're probably thinking, okay, I'm not sure I'm catching this assonance and alliteration. An example that's got all of this, rhythm and rhyme, or rhythm and assonance and alliteration, is Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. If Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, how many peppers did Peter Piper pick? See, you see the consonants, you see the vowels, you see the rhythm, all of that. That's an example. And that's how these proverbs were written. That's how this Hebrew poetry was written. We miss all that. There's another aspect of Hebrew poetry, though, that we do catch. We do catch in translation, and that is that it revolves around parallelism and intensification. That means that you've got two parts to a proverb, two parts to a verse. Okay? You've got a first part and a second part, and there's some form of parallelism between those two parts, okay, whether they're in parallel or that the second line intensifies what's said in the first. There's four ways that you'll see this. There's four different forms of parallelism that you'll find And let's look at some proverb examples so that you can recognize these. Proverbs chapter 2, verse 11 uses synonymous parallelism. This is where you have something stated in the first line, and then you say the same thing, just in a different way, in the second line. Proverbs 2, verse 11, discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Okay? Sounds like, okay, you said it the first time, why are you saying it again? Well, because it brings it extra punch, extra power, it gives you another angle to see the same truth. Okay? Discretion will protect you, understanding will guard you. So that's synonymous parallelism. Okay? Similar concepts in both lines. Next we have antithetical parallelism, which means that you're saying something opposite. Okay, that helps make the point. So for instance, chapter 10 verse 1 says, a wise son brings joy to his father. The second part says, but a foolish son, grief to his mother. Okay, so there you've got the antithetical, the opposite or the contrast that you have between the two lines. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son brings grief to his mother. Both dealing with the same truth, right? But giving you two opposite perspectives to help you learn that truth. Next we have an emblematic parallelism. That's where you have one line that illustrates or clarifies the other with some kind of a word picture. Okay? Chapter 10 verse 26 says, as vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to those who send him. Boy, you can really get the picture, can't you, with this word picture. Just think about you try to put vinegar in your mouth and what it does to your teeth and how it eats in, that acid eats into your teeth. Okay? That's very troublesome and bothersome and likewise, smoke to the eyes, how irritating that is. Well, that's how a sluggard is, a lazy person is to someone who sends them to do a job. Okay? Very irritating. So you see how it illustrates or clarifies with that word picture the intensity of what's trying to be said in the other part. And then the fourth type we have is synthetic parallelism. Okay, synthetic parallelism. That's where the second line basically has the same thought or continues the same thought and completes the story. Okay, there's still two pieces, but it's really one thought that's being conveyed. Okay, look at it and you'll get it. Chapter 3, verse 6, in all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Okay, so the second part there completes the first. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Okay, sounds like a straight prose kind of statement to a degree, but there is a poetic form, and it was written in poetry, and that second part, there's two parts, and the second part does complete the first part. All right, and then chapter 15, verse 3, is another form of synthetic parallelism that describes something that was mentioned in the first line. See, the first one gives the result of the first. 15 verse 3, it says, the eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good. So the second part is describing the eyes of the Lord here, what they're doing. Okay? So the Lord's eyes are keeping watch. The eyes of the Lord are everywhere, keeping watch on the wicked and the good, keeping watch on everybody. So that's a synthetic parallelism. Okay, so with that background now, when you read the poetry, when you read these proverbs, maybe you have a different recognition of how the proverbs are structured and why they're structured how they are. You miss the poetic part of the rhythm and assonance and alliteration, but you still get the parallelism and intensification should come through. Now, as we look at these proverbs, who wrote them? That's another thing to ask as we're looking at the background of these. Well, the very first verse says, these are the proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, the king of Israel. Okay, so it starts out and says, these are from Solomon. And so people say, okay, the book of Proverbs were all written by Solomon. Well, not necessarily. That's starting out one section, and that section goes through chapter 9, verse 18. And then chapter 10, verse 1, we have another section, and that starts out and says, these are the Proverbs of Solomon. So we got some more Proverbs of Solomon. Okay, but you see it's a different section, but we're still dealing with Solomon. And this is a big section. This goes through chapter 22, verse 16. And there, we see a new section start, In verse 17, pay attention and listen to the sayings of the wise. These are just sayings of the wise. So it's not, it's kind of implying and telling us it's not from Solomon, it's from wise people, just general wise statements that, that people have given that, that relate to God's truths. And then 24, verse 23 is the next section. And there, we see these are also sayings of the wise. Okay, so we have more sayings of the wise, a different section. And then that goes through the end of chapter 24, and then chapter 25, it says, these are more proverbs of Solomon. Okay, so we got more Solomon proverbs, but it says, these have been copied by the men of Hezekiah, king of Judah. So, Solomon had them scattered around, and men during the time of Hezekiah, many years later, compiled them together so that we would have them in this book. And then, chapter 30, it says, these are the sayings of Agur, the son of Jakeh, an oracle. Who was that? We have no idea. This is the only time we ever hear this guy. We don't know anything else about him, other than he wrote these sayings here that we have in chapter 30. Okay? And then chapter 31, we now have the sayings of King Lemuel. Okay? King Lemuel, an oracle that his mother taught him. Who was he? Well, if you go through the Kings and Chronicles books, if you go through all the kings of Israel and of Judah, you don't find a King Lemuel. So this is some other king, some other non-Israelite king. So here, this isn't even Israelite or Jewish. But yet, these are clearly sayings from God, so that's why they're included in here. And then, verse 10 of chapter 31, it says, it starts out with this poem, a wife of noble character, who can find? She's worth far more than rubies, etc. So you've got this anonymous poem. We don't know who it's from. And it goes on and talks about the good wife. Okay, the wife of noble character. So as you can see, yes, most of the book of Proverbs does include proverbs that were written by Solomon. But not all of them. There were some other authors in here. But most of them were from Solomon. Well, if most of them were from him, we ought to know who he is. Okay, and you probably already know the answers to these, but in a Bible class, let's go and look at those. Let's go and see. First thing, who was he? Well, we've already kind of answered that in Proverbs chapter 1, verse 1. We see that he was the son of David. He was the king of Israel. We see that also in 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 23. Says that, so Solomon sat on the throne of the Lord as king in place of his father David. He prospered, and all of Israel obeyed him. Okay, so he was king of Israel. He followed his father. He succeeded his father on the throne, his father David, who's recognized as the greatest king that Israel's ever had. Okay, now, why was Solomon qualified to write these proverbs? Why did men in the time of Hezekiah find it important to go grab and capture other proverbs from Solomon to compile in this book? Why do we have it in here? Chapter 4, starting at verse 29. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight, and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the East, and the men of the East valued wisdom greatly and sought wisdom. It was even greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man. Even the wisest people that they knew back then, Ethan, the Ezrahite, wiser than He-Man, wiser than Calcol and Darda, the sons of Mahol. His fame spread to all the surrounding nations. He spoke 3,000 proverbs. We don't have 3,000 of them here, but he spoke more than what we have here. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs numbered 1,005. Okay, we think of David writing songs. Solomon wrote 1,005 songs. He described plant life from the cedar of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He also taught about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. Why was he qualified to write these proverbs? Number one, he was very wise. Number two, what was the source of that wisdom? What do we see in that first verse? God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and understanding. Okay? This is wisdom that he got from God. How? How did he get that wisdom? Okay? You know the story, right? I'll let you tell the story, but I'll go ahead and read it. Okay? We have it in the chapter before. Chapter 3, starting at verse 4. I'll go ahead and read it to you here. The king, that is Solomon, so he was already king before he got his wisdom. Okay, and you see some stuff that he did beforehand. But the king went to Gibeon to offer sacrifices because that was the most important high place. And Solomon offered 1,000 burnt offerings on that altar. Okay, so he started off his kingship dedicating it to God and worshiping God and saying, God, you are going to lead what I do here. That deals with the fear of the Lord, which we're going to see on page a little bit later here. Okay, at Gibeon, then, the Lord, Yahweh, God, appeared to Solomon during the night in a dream, and God said, ask whatever you want me to give you. Okay, what do you want, Solomon? Just ask. Solomon answered, God, you've shown great kindness to your servant, my father David, because he was faithful to you and righteous and upright in heart. You've continued this great kindness to him and have given him a son to sit on this throne this very day. Now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant, me, king in place of my father David. But I'm only a little child. I'm young. I don't know how to carry out my duties. Your servant's here among the people that you've chosen, a great people, too numerous to count or number. So, give your servant, give me a discerning heart to govern your people and to distinguish between right and wrong. For who's able to govern this great people of yours? Okay, that sounds like a very wise request, doesn't it? He's already got wisdom and doesn't know it. Okay, but the Lord was pleased that Solomon had asked for this. So God said to him, since you've asked for this and not for long life or wealth for yourself, nor have you asked for the death of your enemies, but for discernment in administering justice, I'll do what you've asked. I'll give you a wise and discerning heart so that there will be never anyone who has been like you, nor will there ever be. Moreover, I will give you what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that in your lifetime you'll have no equal among kings. And if you walk in my ways and obey my statutes and commands as David your father did, I'll give you a long life. So how did he get this wisdom from God? Because he asked for it, because God granted it to him. It was a gift. Okay? Well, but as you see, it was a pretty wise request that he made. He had wisdom to be able to ask for wisdom, right? What made him wise enough to know that he needed wisdom? Chapter 4 of Proverbs, starting at verse 3. And this is Solomon talking. He says, when I was a boy in my father's house, still tender and an only child of my mother, he taught me, my father taught me, and he said, son, lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you'll live. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Don't forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she'll protect you. Love her and she'll watch over you. Wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom. Though it costs all that you have, get understanding. So how did he have the wisdom to be able to ask for wisdom? Because he was raised in wisdom. His father David taught him to value wisdom and understanding, and he sought it out. Now, he got it from his dad. Did he then try to pass it on to his son? Going on, verse 10. Listen, my son, this is Solomon talking, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction. Don't let it go. Guard it well, for it's your life. So yes, he taught wisdom to his son. He stressed the importance of wisdom and knowledge and understanding to his son. Passed his insights on. That's what we have with these Proverbs. partly for his son, partly for us, partly for people that he didn't know, such as us. Okay. So Solomon was a wise man. He got wisdom from his dad. He got wisdom from God, and he passed that wisdom on to us. And hence we have this book of Proverbs. Now, he tells us at the very beginning, when he starts this out, he gives us five key purposes for this book, hence the focus of today's lesson, the purposes of Proverbs. We've already read some of this, but let's read some again, okay? Chapter 1 starts out, these are the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. These Proverbs, I'm giving them to you for this purpose. Verse 2, for attaining wisdom and discipline. Okay, attaining wisdom and discipline. What is that? Well, wisdom we've already talked about. This is the chokmah. This is the skillful mastery of life. Okay, knowing what to do, how to do, and being able to do the right thing in the right place at the right time. Okay, discipline. What's discipline? Self-control. Okay, not being the foolish, wild person, but having self-control. It's very connected to wisdom, right? These Proverbs will help bring you discipline as well, give you self-control. Second part of verse 2. These Proverbs are for understanding words of insight. Words of insight. Okay, what do words of insight do? They tell us what's right and what's wrong. They give us the right direction. It deals with discernment. So it gives us discernment. These Proverbs are good for attaining wisdom, mastery of life, for attaining discipline, self-control, and for attaining words of insight, understanding words of insight. That is discernment, being able to tell the difference and discern the difference between right and wrong. Verse 3, for acquiring a disciplined and prudent life. That flows from verse 2, right? Which, by having a disciplined and prudent life, that leads us to do what is right and just and fair. Okay? So, it gives us a right and just and fair life, an ethical and moral life. Ethical and moral. Next verses. These Proverbs are for giving prudence to the simple. Okay, the simple are those who don't have wisdom. They're too simple, right? They need prudence. They need some wisdom. Giving knowledge and discretion to the young. Now, the young fall into that category of simple, but that doesn't mean that they are simple for life. They just need the experience of others as well as their own experience. They need that wisdom, okay? So, knowledge and discretion to the young. Okay, because these Proverbs are passing on the experience of others, right? Okay, let the wise listen and add to their learning. So even if you are Solomon, you can still gain from these Proverbs, from these words of wisdom. You can still gain wisdom. Let the wise get wiser, okay, through these Proverbs. Let the discerning, those who have discernment, get guidance, get more discernment, more words of insight. So it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're simple and have no wisdom, or you're the wisest man in the world, you can still benefit from these Proverbs. Verse 6, these Proverbs are also for understanding Proverbs and parables. As we study Proverbs, as we take them to heart, as we apply them, then we can understand Proverbs even more. And parables, difficult sayings, okay? Jesus said a lot of parables, right? We can understand those sayings, those riddles that's what we have, the sayings and riddles of the wise. So we can understand difficult things. Okay? So those are five purposes of these Proverbs that Solomon said. This is why you want to have these. Okay? They'll give you a good life if you follow these Proverbs. But there's really a bigger purpose. Okay? There's a bigger purpose. The whole theme of this book we see in the next verse, verse 7. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. If you look at the top of page 1, that's today's theme verse. Okay, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. We'll talk about those fools next week when we talk about the simple, the mocker, and the fool. Okay, and we'll get more into those that don't have wisdom. But if we want to have a full life, we are to seek wisdom and knowledge. And to do so, it starts with the fear of the Lord. So, What is that? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Now, there's a similar verse that we see in chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Okay, so is the fear of the Lord the beginning of wisdom, or is the fear of the Lord the beginning of knowledge? Is that saying the same thing, or wisdom and knowledge the same? You might hit pause here and think about that. Okay, what is wisdom? What is knowledge? What is understanding? How are they different? How are they the same? In class, we'll talk about this a little bit, okay? But they are different, but they're very related, right? Can you have wisdom without knowledge? Yes. There are wise people who don't know a lot, people who just know what to do in the right time and the right place and how to react to things, but they may not be the brightest people on earth or may not have a lot of knowledge. On the other hand, there's people who have a lot of knowledge but don't have a lot of wisdom. You know, how can this person be so smart but they don't have any common sense? Okay? So you've got people with knowledge without wisdom as well. But often when you have wisdom, you seek out knowledge. When you have knowledge, you seek out wisdom, and you grow in both. And both of them come, the true wisdom and the true knowledge come from what? In those verses we read, from the fear of the Lord. All right, what's that? What is the fear of the Lord? Well, just turn back a few pages to Psalm 128, verse 1, and it kind of tells us that. It says, blessed are all who fear the Lord. Okay, there we see the fear of the Lord there. But then the second part explains it. Who walk in His ways. Blessed are all who fear the Lord, those who walk in His ways. So those who walk in God's ways are those who fear the Lord. How is that related? What is that? Why is that called fear of the Lord? Well, as you fear the Lord, what do? You recognize that He's in control, and you stop following yourself, you follow Him. You follow whoever's in control. And our tendency, the temptations that Satan gives us, is to think and to act like we are in control. But we're not. And once we recognize that God is in control, and we accept that, and we put our fear and trust in Him, turn things over to Him and follow Him, that's fear of the Lord. That's walking in His ways. That is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Okay, so recognizing that God is in control and seeking to walk in His ways is what we mean when we say the fear of the Lord. So, if the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, how can we understand that? What are ways that we can understand the fear of the Lord? Proverbs chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. My son, if you accept my words and store up my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, okay, in other words, seek this wisdom and knowledge and understanding, if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, not your understanding, not your truths, but rather the understanding, the truths, the wisdom, which is what? The truths, the wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding from God. So if you seek Him, recognizing He's in control, if you look for that as if for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and you'll find the knowledge of God. As we live following God, then we'll understand what it means to follow God and we'll gain His wisdom, knowledge, and understanding and be able to have fullness of life. Jesus says, I came that they may have life and have it to the fullest. Okay, so we seek His truths, we seek His commands, we seek His wisdom, we seek His understanding, we seek His insight, and in doing so, we can understand the fear of the Lord. Now then, we saw that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom and knowledge and understanding. How? Going on, verse 6, for it is the Lord who gives wisdom. From His mouth come knowledge and understanding. The true wisdom, the true knowledge, the true understanding is God's, is from God. He holds victory in store for the upright. He's a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. As we are faithful to him, we put our trust in him, we follow his lead, we recognize that he's in control, then he protects us, he guards us, he blesses us, he fills us with wisdom and knowledge and understanding. Okay? So that's the beginning of this. Yes, anybody can pick up the Bible and read through these Proverbs and gain from them. But they gain from them as they recognize that these are truths of God and that these are things that God, and they seek to follow God and his truths. Now, as we live in a right relationship with him, putting him first, following his lead, we receive his wisdom, then what happens? Next verses. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair. Every good path. Because wisdom will enter your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul and discretion will protect you and understanding will guard you. So as we fear the Lord, we walk in his ways, we follow him, we see and accept and trust that he's in control, then he will give us his wisdom and knowledge, and as a result, we will know what is right and just and fair. We will know every good path. We'll have his wisdom that will be pleasant to our souls, and it will protect us and guard us. Okay? So, you want to live a good life? Learn God's truths. You want to live a good life? Fear the Lord. Follow him. Walk in his ways. Why? If you haven't got it figured out yet, let's look at a few Proverbs. Why should we try to find God's will in what we do? Chapter 16, verses 3 and 4. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. Whatever you do, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. That's 1 Corinthians 10:31. That's my favorite verse. As we commit to him, we will be following him. We will be walking in his ways, and success is guaranteed. Our plans will succeed. Why? Because, verse 4, the Lord works out everything for his own ends, even the wicked for a day of disaster. So, if we're trying to lead the way, if we're following ourselves instead of God, what we're trying to do may or may not happen because the Lord works out everything for his own ends. The Lord's will is what's going to take place. And as we align our will with his will, as we follow his lead, commit to the Lord whatever we do, well then our will be his will. Our plans will be his plans, and they will succeed. Chapter 3, verses 5 through 8. Key verses here. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make your path straight. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord. Shun evil. This will bring health to your body and nourishment to your bones. Okay? Trust in the Lord, and he will guide and bless you. Your life will benefit even your health. You'll live better lives in every way. Chapter 20, verse 24. A man's steps are directed by the Lord. Okay, so whether we follow him or not, he's there directing us. A man's steps are directed by the Lord. How then can anyone understand his own way? It's easier to understand God's way as we seek to follow him than it is to understand our own way. You know, Paul said, you know, the stuff that I want to do, I don't do it. Instead, it's the stuff that I don't want to do that I do. Woe is me. But you know, as we stop trying to do our thing and we do God's thing, then we'll come to understanding and wisdom and knowledge and we'll have successful lives. Let's close in prayer. God our Father, we thank and praise you that you love us so much that you not only created us, but you're there with us and you are here among us, ready to guide and lead us, welcome us in your arms, to show us the way, to give us your wisdom and knowledge so that we can have great, successful, positive lives, joy-filled lives. We thank and praise you that you've loved us so much that you've revealed yourself to us in your scriptures. You've revealed to us what's important in our lives and how to live the lives that you've intended us to live. And as we go through this study of the Proverbs that you've given us in your word, we ask you to help us grow in wisdom and knowledge and insight and understanding so that we may come closer to you and walk closer with you in your ways. In the name of him who revealed how it could really happen in a full life, in the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.